sounds like the impossible to compete with Phil Baer on the line here. My apologies for that last musical number. Apparently that tape has seen better days many, many years ago. So you couldn't hear it, and neither could I. So, hey, on the line with us is community activist Phil Baer. Hi, Phil.
Hello there, Robert.
And remember to put your voice away from the phone. Usually I ask people to speak up, but you are a man whose voice can be heard, and gratefully so, many miles away. In fact, you probably don't even need the phone. Just turn west and start talking.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment.
Definitely, definitely. So, have you read today's Sentinel story?
Oh, yes.
And, you know, I'm noticing a couple of things in the story. Of course, the whole thing seems to be, although it does quote you, it doesn't quote you in anything of substance. And it mentions the beach projects coming up. It mentions there's a Seaview Terrace, 15 new market rate units at 518 2nd Street are approved. Sea Beach Townhomes, 8 new market rate units are approved. 96 new apartment units at 155 Chestnut Street. Now, is that the Dolphin Lee project, or...?
At 155 Chestnut, how many units is that?
It says 96 new apartments.
Oh, no, that's, isn't that Maynard Madsen on the old ice plant site?
That could be. I'm really a novice here.
Yes, I believe so.
Well, so I guess the improvements is...
No affordable units there.
No affordable units, and there's a motel and hotel renovations, 14 rooms at the Sea Breeze, 12 new rooms at the LVU Lodge, a La Bahia Conference Center with 250-275 rooms, and the inn at Cowell Beach with a 30-room condominium hotel is proposed.
Right.
Plus a 6-acre depot site expected to be purchased by the city in June or July.
Right.
There's no mention of the Dolphin Lee project, which I guess was a matter of concern to you at the city council meetings recently, as well as the city council speak out town hall brainstorming session. What is it? First of all, can you tell listeners what's going on with this? I mean, this story doesn't mention what appears to be the project that's of most concern to the residents there. What?
Right. That addresses the question of the process, which thus far has been sort of quasi-official and quiet. We know damn well that the project exists in somebody's mind and is being advanced through these leaks to the press and so on, to the point where it's picking up a certain amount of credibility, assumption of reality, and yet, as you say, it doesn't even get formally identified.
Well, we're talking, but what you're talking about is a project to eliminate two existing apartment buildings, the Dolphin and the Lee complexes.
Yes.
And to replace them with more expensive housing.
Yes. And they just happen to be the two apartment complexes in which live most of the low-income Latinos who publicly objected to the last plan to expand the boardwalk and realign 3rd Street and do a few other machinations down in the Beach Flats area.
Well,
these were the people who went down to the city council with petitions and signed letters and said no boardwalk expansion, no realignment of 3rd Street, no relocation, forced relocation of residents. The exact individuals, and now all of a sudden the project that is on the drawing board is one that would in fact displace those people. The suggestion to me being that somebody has concluded that if you got rid of these complainers, you could then go ahead and resurrect the entire beach plan, including the boardwalk expansion and all the other objectionable aspects. They're basically trying to get rid of the people who stand in the way of progress, if you will.
Well, how many people live in the beach flats in your view? Give me an estimate of the number of folks there.
Well, it would depend on, you know, it's like one of these existential things or something. The numbers vary widely. It depends on who's counting and who's allowing themselves to be counted.
Give me a range.
I think the general range is between 1,200 and 2,200. That's just in Beach Flats proper, that is to say everything east of Riverside Avenue.
And how many people would be displaced in the Dolphin Lee?
The Dolphin Lee would, again, the number could vary considerably. 60 families in the Dolphin Lee, I think you might assume 200 people.
Mm-hmm. Now, I noticed the Dolphin Lee project isn't mentioned in this article.
Yes.
And does that mean it's still completely, I mean, let me ask you this before.
I have no reassurance from anybody that they have given up on this plan. Everybody, the people who know how the city operates here are of the opinion that somehow they got fixated on the idea of quote-unquote doing something in Beach Flats. And
rather than fix the potholes and
exactly
the sewer system, they're going after the housing.
Such as the residents have been asking them to do for 20 years, frankly, never gets done. Worst streets in town in terms of condition of the streets. The sewer system needs work. Street lighting needs work. Landscaping could do miracles for the housing. A little cooperative work with the existing residents and the existing property owners could do miracles, but the city just doesn't seem to operate that way. Okay. They have to gain control. They have to own it.
Phil, have you made proposals to the new city council members who, after all, were elected primarily around the Beach Flats issue? It was my sense. Fitzmaurice, Cronin, Sugar, have you spoken to them about these capital improvement needs?
Yes, I don't know of anything tangible that's been going on. You know, these guys get overwhelmed with reading material and issues tossed at them, and we probably need to boil it all down to specific proposals and really labor the point, but they're not doing anything much to date.
Well, I'm thinking, how about a march down to City Hall with the Latino residents demanding capital improvement, showing pictures of the potholes, demanding that all the resources that are going into these vast planning commission studies on the Beach Flats be used to make actual improvements?
Yeah, that's an excellent idea. We have a meeting on Wednesday, a sort of a city meeting, again, vague in terms of the extent to which it's a real official city public hearing. I think Timothy Fitzmaurice may have called it. It's at the community trailer in the Beach Flats at 7:30 Wednesday evening on the, what's that address? 200 Raymond Street is the street address of the community trailer, a rather ugly structure that they occupied our pretty little park with, supposedly temporarily, but now a decade later it's still there and growing uglier every day, but that's another story. 7:30 Wednesday, for anybody interested in the Beach Flats in general or how this city works relative to public process and relative to housing concerns,
yeah,
that would be a little
right
opportunity to view it.
And it's happening at the same time as the 7 o'clock forum against Haight at Loudoun Nelson Center and the 7:30 sleeping band forum at Stevenson. So it's
yes,
a big time, busy evening. Plus, of course, no doubt you'll be in jail at that time, Phil, with the sit-in at the Congressman Farr's office. So,
well, trying to slip you a jigsaw blade in a birthday cake.
I accept that birthday cake. Why do you, you did speak to Sentinel writer Daryl Cole about this Dolphin Lee project, and isn't it a little strange that that is never mentioned once in this article? I mean, you know, the concerns of the neighborhood that this was a form of ethnic cleansing, dare I use those words, economic ethnic cleansing by driving out low-income people.
No doubt.
Who are mainly Hispanic there.
Yes.
Seems to me a hot button issue, particularly for, you know, council members who are hot to make this a hate crime free area and all that sort of thing.
Right. Well, their justification for not addressing it more openly is their denial that there's any reality to the plan. The way it's proceeding is sort of this leaked thing, but not officially acknowledged, enables them to, when convenient, Armenian say, oh, there simply is no such plan.
Well,
we're just brainstorming.
Well, let's look at this. I mean, you know, I was denounced by Skip Spitzer, co-chair of SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, 2 weeks ago when I stood up and said that SCAN had all but endorsed, I think I said they actually had endorsed the Dolphin Lee project. And I think I may have even read in either a letter from you or from Jane, a similar claim. Are we off base here? Is SCAN not endorsed this plan? I mean, where does it sit?
Well, they wiggle around the word endorsement, alleging that they simply voted to support the concept on some sort of conceptual level or study it or something, and it was something less than SCAN endorsement. Our point was that it still lends credibility to a project that has never even been discussed with the people who would be dislocated to make room for it. So there again, the process is really screwed up. You don't allow a project to gain this aura of acceptedness. You know, the wheels are rolling. It's going to happen. It's been through the hurdles, when in fact it hasn't been through the hurdles at all. There's something unfair about, and non-public, almost devious, you know, whether conscious or unconscious, the way it works out so that something is almost unofficially approved before the very people who would be impacted by it even know that it's being considered.
Now, these,
something wrong there.
These charges were made, more or less, I understand, before publicly to city council members, correct?
Oh, yes. I had to endanger my previously cordial relationship with the council majority by getting, I guess, slightly irate about it.
And of course, you immediately received all kinds of reassuring phone calls from them, Fitzmaurice, Crone Sugar, and our very own Sleeping Band Byers, that all was well and that you had nothing to worry about, right?
No, I didn't. I have very little assurance to that effect whatsoever.
You mean to say that they are not only proceeding, or they are not responding to one of the basic constituent groups that got them elected? Is that what you're saying?
Well, at the community forum at the Civic the other day, you were there, I believe. Though I guess you hadn't gotten there by that time. You were off saving the world in some other format. What you missed then was Timothy Fitzmaurice responding to a group of us, I think about 40 of us, who were saying, what's with this Dolphin Lee project? We don't want it. We don't like it. We weren't asked about it. We won't benefit from it. Neither will our neighborhood. By saying, Fitzmaurice saying, well, there is no project. And Catherine Byers nodding along, you know, it was just an idea. We're just trying to start a conversation. And us saying, well, thus far, the conversation has been one way.
Conversation with the developers. Right?
Exactly. No conversation with the residents at all. But there was that little bit of distancing of themselves as individuals from the project. But I'm still of the opinion that the project is on go. You know, it's got all these people who make a living off such projects. Wining and dining the council behind the scenes.
Who are we talking about here?
Well, that would be the old people who were responsible for things like Neary's Lagoon, Sycamore, the Mercado on Pacific Avenue, La Playa on Riverside, and La Brant. These affordable housing bureaucrats who get a piece of the action in one way or another, either as project managers, actually financially benefit from these things, and then take the money and live in some neighborhood far removed from them.
Talking about people like Arnie Fishman?
He's gone. I think he just, you know, made enough so that he's able to live probably in a mansion in Los Gatos or someplace.
Can you
just cashed in and booked, I suspect, a very wealthy person by this time.
Can you name names as to who's now the
Well, Bruce Van Allen is a big supporter of the project. He was the project manager for El Centro. just a very determined advocate. In my opinion, thinks he's going to get a piece of it in one way or another. Andy Schifrin, Don Lane, Elizabeth Vogel, Mercy Housing Charities. There's a whole network of people who benefit from these things to the point where they're just absolutely blind to the downsides of these projects and will deny the existence of a rather vicious heroin-dealing gang associated with one of these projects. You know, they just deny the negative impacts of this because they just take the money and move out to the safe west side or someplace. They don't even know what's going on in these projects that they created. They're still just living off the savings.
Phil, have you written anything about this? I know there was a letter or two that showed up in the Good Times, I think maybe the City on the Hill, maybe the Metro or the Sentinel, but have you got information for people who want to have a sort of a one or two page summary of what's really going on around this? Let's put it this way.
I have not put together a one or two page summary of it.
We know that by Wednesday, when the forum comes up at the 200 Raymond Street at 7:30 p.m. in the community trailer, you will have such a flyer ready for all of us who don't know about it and want to know about it.
Robert, you read my mind like Sylvia Plath or some world-renowned psychic.
I've been known to do that. And also, I suggest if you want to pass that on to free radio, some of us can put it on the internet for other people who aren't even in town to catch the latest scams, shenanigans, and shindig.
Yeah, I'd like to do it up. I don't have all the facts. I really wish that somebody like you would employ your considerable investigative talents and really get the skinny on this, because I'm convinced that there's layers of graft and corruption to be revealed, but I'll say what I know.
That's great. We also are going to be talking next about Yugoslavia, the upcoming protests in Sam Farr's
office.
Please
do.
On Wednesday. Okay, I guess today at 2:30, for those who wish to participate in the Yugoslav Crisis Forum, which is may or may not be planning a new forum on the 2nd, and may or may not be...
I think it is, from what I hear, secondhand.
Right, may or may not be allowing socialists and other red-tinged types to be a part of that forum.
I'm not sure about that. That's an issue to be dealt with at the 2:30 meeting, an open meeting to which anybody, socialist or otherwise, is more than welcome.
Right, and I think that that's happening this afternoon. And I encourage people to check that out. And if people want more information about Dolphin Lee, Beach Flats, or, you know, I guess issues of... Are you?
I'm certainly ready to talk about the situation in Yugoslavia. I'm just very distressed by developments there.
Your number, you want to give it to
423-0170.
We're talking with Phil Baer, an organizer both against the war and for beach flats and for the retention of the people who are living there now.
Right.
Chairman
of the Save Robert Norris Committee.
Yes, indeed. That's one of your more important functions.
Yes.
I want to thank you, Phil. Is there more you want to conclude with?
Let's see. Is that about the extent of the current list of daily atrocities? I guess it is. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Oh, you're welcome, Phil.
Talk to you soon. See you soon.
All right.
Okay, bye, Robert.
I've slept up on Croton, I've camped by the Wainstones as well. I've sunbathed on Kinder, been burned to a cinder, and many more things I can tell. My rucksack has off been my pillow, the heather has off been my bed, and soon I've been far from the mountains. I think I would rather be dead. I'm a rambler, I'm a rambler from Manchester way. I get all my pleasure the hard moorland way. I may be a wage slave on Monday, but I am a free man on Sunday. The day was just ending and I was descending down Grinsbrook just by Upper Tor, when a voice cried, "Hey you, in the way keepers do," he'd the worst face that ever I saw. The things that he said were unpleasant, in the teeth of his fury I said, "Sooner than far from the mountains, I think I would rather be dead. I'm a rambler, I'm a rambler from Manchester way. I get all my pleasure the hard moorland way. I may be a wage slave on Monday, but I am a free man on Sunday." He called me a louse and said, "Think of the grouse." Well, I thought, but I still couldn't see why old Kinder Scout and the moors round about couldn't take both the poor grouse and me. He said, "All this land is my master's." At that I stood shaking my head. No man has the right to own mountains any more than the deep ocean can. I'm a rambler, I'm a rambler from Manchester way. I get all my pleasure the hard moorland way. I may be a wage slave on Monday, but I am a free man on Sunday. I once loved a maid, a spot welder by trade. She was fair as the rowan in bloom, and the blue of her eye matched the June moorland sky. And I would have from April till June, on the day that we should have been married, I went for a ramble instead. For sooner than far from the mountains, I think I would rather be dead. I'm a rambler, I'm a rambler from Manchester way. I get all my pleasure the hard moorland way. I may be a wage slave on Monday, but I am a free man on Sunday. So I'll walk where I will, over mountain and hill, and I'll lie where the bracken is deep. I belong to the mountains, the clear running fountains, where the grey rocks rise rugged and steep. I've seen the white hare in the gullies, and the curlew fly high overhead. And sooner than far from the mountains, I think I would rather be dead. I'm a rambler, I'm a rambler from Manchester way. I get all my pleasure the hard moorland way. I may be a wage slave on Monday, but I am a free man on Sunday.
And that was Ewan McCall, and Ewan is one of my favorites. He's been dead for about 5 or 10 years now, but his music, just as vigorous as ever, just as great. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, on your radio dial. We're a 24-hour-a-day community radio station that is open to you. We do PSAs, public service announcements. Give us a call at 427-4523 and just put it on the line and we will put it on the air. Our email is FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I think I'm blasting you out again, my apologies. At FRSC at cruzeo.com. The show you're listening to right now is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. That's the Civil Rights for Folks on the Street show, with particular focus on the war in Yugoslavia, the bombing that we are endorsing, even if we say we aren't. That is to say that our money is being used to fund. We're not endorsing it, but we are getting used here. encourage you to be aware of the sit-in coming up on Wednesday demanding that Farr stop the bombing, or at least stop his endorsement of the bombing. We have 10 questions for our good representative and with his peace through bomb solution. One, do you support NATO's use of deadly depleted uranium munitions? Two, do you support a bombing campaign that has already killed hundreds of civilians, over 1,200 by some estimates, if that means collateral damage of thousands more maimed by casually producing cluster bombs? Three, do you deny this war violates the 1949 Geneva Convention and their 1997 protocols, with NATO systematically destroying water installations, sanitation systems, power plants, civilian bridges, pharmaceutical factories, and other, quote, infrastructure essential to human survival? Four, do you deny this war violates the 1945 Nuremberg Charter, which defines war crimes as the wanton destruction of cities, towns, or villages not justified by military necessity? Five, do you deny this war is a violation of the UN Charter, which requires Security Council approval for collective military action against other states? B, a violation of NATO's own defensive-only military alliance charter. C, a violation of the 1980 Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties that outlaws the coercion or threats of force to compel governments to sign a treaty or agreement. And D, a violation of the Helsinki Accords, final act of 1975, which guarantees the territorial borders of all the nations of Europe, including Yugoslavia. Six, do you feel any government would have been able to sign the Rambouillet Agreement, which specifically allows stationing of foreign troops anywhere in Yugoslavia, not just Kosovo, and requires Yugoslavia to support their upkeep and, in essence, relinquish sovereignty to the U.S. and its NATO allies? These are questions I'm reading will be put to Representative Sam Farr on Wednesday. Actually, we're going to put them sooner. He'll be getting them tomorrow so he can have some time to bone up on his history book or whatever he's using to get information from to support this bombing campaign to the tune of $11.8 billion. Questions continue. Do you support a bombing campaign that has already resulted in catastrophic environmental damage to the Danube with tons of crude oil and lethal chemicals poisoning the longest river in Europe and source of drinking water for 10 million people? Eight, do you deny the KLA, that's the Albanian Liberation Army so-called, was identified by the U.S. as a terrorist group financed through the largest heroin trade in Europe? Nine, do you deny that the bombing is creating many more refugees than any Yugoslavian offensive against the KLA could, and solidifying Yugoslavians in hatred against the U.S., and I would add, in their own, in solidifying Yugoslavians behind the Milosevic regime, if for those who don't like Milosevic. The very objectives of this campaign are preposterously being thwarted, or perhaps not even the real objectives, and that, of course, is the concern of a lot of us. Again, the actual question is, do you deny the bombing is creating many more refugees than any Yugoslavian offensive against the KLA could, and solidifying Yugoslavians in hatred against the U.S.? And 10, are you willing to risk nuclear war with China and Russia in a bombing campaign now overfunded with your votes that is escalating into a huge ground war of 500 million people against a Kentucky-sized nation of 10 million? Against a population even the Nazis were unable to subdue in World War II. And again, I remind folks that on April 28th, and I guess it was a day or two before, there were four votes. Farr voted against ordering Clinton to withdraw U.S. forces from the conflict. He voted against prohibiting Clinton from using ground troops without congressional approval, in essence giving Clinton approval for ground troops implicitly by refusing to bar them, in favor of authorizing the current airstrikes against Yugoslavia, and in favor of the 11.8 and more in additional military aid to continue and intensify the bombing. This is from the Mercury News of 4/29/99. You want to call Farr up in case you can't come to our protest on Wednesday, and we encourage you to come and bring all your friends and your relatives and everybody else you can think of. But if you can't do that, give him a call at 429-1976 and tell him just very simply, stop the bombing. Again, what the Santa Cruz Coalition to Stop the Bombing is requesting or demanding from Farr is a town meeting within a week after Wednesday. What many of us want is an end to the bombing. And however that is to be gotten, that's what we are trying to get. People are being destroyed. Relationships between nations are being ruptured. Thermonuclear war is, well, it's never disappeared, but it's rearing its ugly head again as a threat. I mean, I guess I'm repeating myself, but if you have thoughts on this, you can give me a call. This is an open talk show. It's not just me. It's also you. 427-3772 is the number to call. And I also have some updates from Shana Gluck, who is herself fluent in Serb or Serbo-Croatian. And she has been in Yugoslavia on a number of occasions. She had a widely publicized custody battle which she fought to get her children back. And she is just aghast at what is going on over there and has been passing on a lot of interesting information that you don't get in the mainstream media. And most recently, she sent me an email. I'm going to read it on the show here, and I'm going to read it right now. There will be a meeting Monday, tomorrow, May 17th at 4 p.m. in the Student Center. That's of the Santa Cruz Coalition to Stop the Bombing, and you can call them at 423-1448 if you want more information now, 423-1448. For possibly the first time last Friday, a major newspaper, the San Francisco Examiner, ran a front-page headline reporting that the United States is indeed using radioactive weapons in Yugoslavia. And I saw that story. We actually presented that story to Representative Farr. As Representative Farr was unreachable. He was in the air and could not be contacted. While the piece focuses more on the dangers to U.S. soldiers instead of the destruction of Yugoslavia, it's worth checking out, according to Shana. Another mainstream article about the terror inflicted on the bombing on Albanians appeared in yesterday's New York Times on page A11. Notice it was buried. The piece was written by Stephen Erlinger, and it's called Bomb Villagers Ask, Why Are We Guilty? Food for thought. Notice that in the cases of Yugoslav and Chinese outrage over their people being killed in the bombings, our media repeatedly refers to their media as state-run propaganda. Almost every day an article is printed criticizing Chinese and Yugoslav newspapers as stoking nationalist sentiments. Wouldn't it be interesting to find a story that criticized the U.S. corporate-owned media, much more powerful than Yugoslavia's, for bombarding us with pictures of refugees and dead bodies day in and day out with a particular agenda in mind? Yugoslavia yesterday reported that more than 1,200 people have been killed and 5,000 injured as a result of 7 weeks of NATO airstrikes. New York Times, May 14th. And this week's edition of The City on a Hill has an editorial by Shana herself on page 31 that discusses cluster bombs. And that's a free publication. You can pick it up at numerous places, including Logos or Polar Bear on the east side. Some of the bakeries on the west side. That's the City on a Hill Press, the UCSC student paper. There are still flyers available up at the Student Center. For those of you students who are listening to this broadcast, please pick some up and distribute them. And I encourage people to go down to the wine and cheese and jazz festival downtown and spread the word that while everyone is having their brie and their booze under the watchful, benign eye of the Downtown Association, people are dying. People, children are having their health threatened. Babies are being blown apart. I mean, it was a really incredible picture, which actually I put on a flyer yesterday, which shows Albanian mothers grieving. God, the horrible, looking at them, it's just incredible, over at the cradle of a dead child Friday in Korisa, Kosovo, which is where the NATO authorities have admitted that their bombs killed 87 people, blew them apart. Now, they claim, of course, that these were people that they think may have been moved in by the Serbians to embarrass Western sources, to embarrass NATO. They don't have any evidence that that was done, but they claim they were really targeting those military vehicles, and they just don't know where the Albanians came from. So that must mean that, of course, the Serbian government moved them in. I don't even know what to say about this, and perhaps you can say something about it. I'm at 429. I'll get this straight in just a moment. 427, there we go. 427-3772, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And you're tuned to 96.3 FM, which is Bathrobes Piers Broadsides. Another interesting story from Shana, which I'm hopefully about to find here. I may not have it. Well, I'm hoping that we can actually get a radio show together. If any free radio broadcasters or folks who aren't on free radio but would like to do a daily or twice weekly or thrice weekly, how many times weekly broadcast, just with a few pieces of news about Yugoslavia that we could rebroadcast during the day, want to do that, give us a call on the voicemail line at 427-4523. I think that that's something that would be really useful, although perhaps broadcasters are doing this already. I certainly hope they are. Well, I think what we should do also is play some of the material from Representative Farr's office in the sit-in. I suppose the folks are interested in that. But one of the main themes of this show, and unfortunately our main guest has not made it to the studio, I hope he's okay. His name is Ron, and he gave us a really hair-raising but quite level-headed account of how he was assaulted by troll busters a week ago Saturday, at an abandoned house near the Saul's Leathers, behind Saul's Leathers down along, I guess it's River Street. And he told this story to the head of the Homeless Services Center, Ken Cole. He told it to Becky Johnson. He told it to the Reverend Phillips, who was earlier on the show. He told it to me, and I'm going to recount it. I'd hoped he would be able to give it to us live, because I think it really is important information to have. He told us that he had gotten permission to use this house to sleep in from the owner. He is a working person. He looks like a kind of a very buff guy, tattoos, well, works out. He'd been sleeping there, and he clean-cut kind of person. He works every morning, he says. And he gets back late sometimes and misses the Interfaith Satellite Shelter pickup, and also it's difficult to get into these days since there's so few spaces, less than 30 for 500 to 1,500 homeless people in Santa Cruz. And I guess that's kind of a tight fit. I've got to do a little shoehorning there. So he goes to this room instead. He invited two people to come with him on this one evening, two other homeless people. And in the middle of, actually it wasn't the middle of the night, he said it was around 10:30 or 11, he was awakened from his sleep by the shouts, men's voices shouting, "Santa Cruz police, get up." He says he jumped up, and he saw not a police officer, but two blonde-haired, blue-eyed guys and other people behind them, all dressed in black with black boots. And the details he talked about, one of them had on a mask. Generally, they weren't masked. They were surprised to see him. Some of them were armed with pipes and such. He shouted to his companions, "Get up, get up, get out." And they cowered in their, one, I guess, got away. One cowered in his sleeping bag. I mean, I would too, perhaps. And he then rolled out of there himself, apparently in some sort of almost military maneuver, and ran around, and counting the shadows and counting the figures he saw, he figured there were about seven people, and he heard a woman's voice involved in this too. They all seemed to be dressed alike, he said, with sort of black clothing, black shirts, black pants, black boots, and he thought this was some sort of supremacist group or prison kind of related group or skin. He called them skinheads as well, so I guess he was saying that some of them, or all of them, I'm not quite sure, because some of them had their heads covered, were skinheads. And he noted the truck they were driving, a pickup truck with a muffler problem, and another vehicle that he later described to the police. He actually made a police report on this issue. And one man left behind, Joe Barker, was so badly beaten by these people that he had to go to the hospital with broken ribs. And I reported on this at the last show, but I didn't have this actual eyewitness. And apparently I still don't, at least not on the air. But hopefully I will try to contact him again if he's still in one piece. I hope he is. That was one bit of information I wanted to convey to the audience. Plus, I'm going to play you now an interview from a man who wishes to remain anonymous. He's a musician on the Mall, and he speaks for himself. He's another person who's had dealings with these very recent, very vicious, almost lethal assaults on homeless people. which almost people say they are not going to tolerate. And we're talking, you know, some kind of local war going on here, unless the peacemakers can step into the gap here. Let's hear what this man has to say.
And CJ, you're a musician. You're a man who has been around Santa Cruz for at least a decade on and off.
Yes, I've been here for probably, well, we've known each other for 10 years, at least. When I started here homeless, I got better, then I went down again and separated from my wife. And it's been arranged for me to be homeless again.
And how long have you been outside this time?
This time I've been outside for 3 months.
And has this time been different than the other times?
Yeah, it's dangerous.
And tell us about that.
There are a certain faction of our people that are going around and beating up the homeless to help us. They don't pick the active ones usually. They usually pick the ones that are in sleeping bags.
And when did you first hear about this?
About 10 years ago.
So, but you think it's changed from 10 years ago?
Yeah, now it's what they call skinhead people. They seem to think that they're doing society a favor or something like that, I think. I don't know.
So when you say skinhead people, you're talking about like
leather people, the leather with the chrome spikes and shaved heads and the jump boots and the whole stroke.
Have you talked to any of these people like independently of this, like during the daytime downtown?
You're inhospitable. You cannot.
And what was the first incident you heard of violence on your return in the last 3 months?
Probably about 2 months ago. Somebody got the hell kicked out of them in their sleeping bag. They caught this poor drunk sleeping in the sleeping bag down towards the Highway 1 bridge. And they stomped the hell out of him.
And do you know who he was or what happened to him?
No, just hearsay. Nothing I can do, but it's hearsay. I think it was documented in the paper. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. And after that, did you hear of any subsequent incidents?
Not continuously. For the last few months, I've heard at least once a week of somebody getting the hell kicked out of them. It's really, really nasty.
How many people would you say you talk to every day who are homeless? So that, I mean, let's get a sense of how, you know, what kind of circulation do you have?
And I'm a mall musician, so I talk to everybody because I'm friends with everybody. I've been here for a long time and I'm pretty well known. And what comes out of it is these people are scared to death. They've got no place to go unless you want to walk like 5 miles out of town. They have nowhere to go and they're being hunted. I have not been hunted since Vietnam.
You yourself are a veteran of the military.
Yes, I am.
And how long were you in the military?
From 1969 to 1974.
And what kind of work did you do there?
I was a Forest Reconnaissance Marine, and I did two tours in them, and I'm much better prepared to deal with this crap than these boys are.
Which kind of brings us to kind of closer to the present, when you had a rather, shall we say, shocking experience.
Yeah, traumatic is what's going on. Mm-hmm. I have a place to sleep that I've set up.
So actually, we're going to continue the conversation. Now we thought we'd pause briefly for breakfast. Heck with the breakfast, we'll keep eating.
Denny's.
Well, we're going to eat and talk.
Denny's.
If you hear chewing, that's how it goes.
Yes.
So you say we're going to talk about this incident that happened about a month ago now?
Yeah, about a month. About a month.
And you say you come from your father was a hunter and you kind of learned.
I was raised to be a woodsman. And I was raised to survive. My papa gave me the tools that I need to survive in any situation.
Where were you brought up?
Michigan. Now a place called Mansville.
Can I help you with anything?
So,
your background is that of sort of raises a hunter in Michigan. This means actually you tracked down animals when you were a child and shot.
Yeah, I was taught to hunt and fish and do the whole stroke and track, tracking an animal is the same thing as tracking a human being, except it's easier. But sometimes I did that in Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
But comes with it is the thought. Comes with it is the thought of you learn to preserve yourself. And about a month ago, I was down my usual sleeping spot. Was taken because there was a police officer sitting with his car idling in front of where I needed to go in. So I decided to opt to go down to the river. And I went about probably a half a mile down the river, maybe a little less, a little more. I rolled off my my stuff, and I was sitting there smoking a cigarette, and all of a sudden I heard this poor dude scream, and I heard these guys laughing and stuff, and we just got through talking about troll busters.
Me being?
My friends in the mall, other homeless people.
About what time of day was this?
Well, we're talking like probably 11 o'clock at night.
Uh-huh.
11 o'clock, so. And the previous evening we'd been talking. And what happened was I was in my mind, and I heard this poor dude. We have like thorn apple trees down on the river down there. And this poor dude ran through the thorn apples. He was so afraid. He was screaming in terror. Mm-hmm. And what I did was I took my bedroll out of my bag, collapsed it so that it looked like my shoulders, put my hat on top of it so it looked like I was sleeping there, and climbed up in a tree and hung and sat there on top of a limb waiting for these people to see what was going to happen. Well, what came out of it was short and curious was this guy clumped and hit my where my shoulders would have been with a pretty thick club.
By this guy, you mean a part of a new group of people, or
I don't know whether it was skinheads. All I know is that there was a group of people hunting homeless people. And I'm sure of that. And he smacked my where my shoulders would have been.
In your sleeping bag.
In my sleeping bag.
You'd laid out kind of a decoy.
Yes, definitely a decoy.
Now, how many were you able to see him before he did this, or see who?
I didn't get a super good visual of it.
Did you see how many people there were?
There was two. Yeah, there was four. Uh-huh. And then there was too much going on. When you get an adrenaline rush,
uh-huh,
things change.
Right.
You don't pay attention. You're surviving. You don't change. I'm dealing one person dealing with two.
Right. But as you watch from the tree as they approached, you said you saw four people.
No, there were two people that came down. One guy hit my bag with a club.
With a club.
And he hit right where my shoulders were going to be. He'd have broken my back.
Uh-huh.
He'd have broken my back easily.
And were these people saying anything?
No. He was laughing. That was fun. This is a great sport. And then when I dropped out of a tree in front of his face, he was rather surprised.
I imagine.
I said, "Hi, surprise." I did do that. I dropped right in front of him. I said, "Hi, surprise." And he did exactly what I asked him, thought he was going to do. He raised the club up to hit me again, mm-hmm, and then exposed his ribs. And I put my knees into the very top of his ribs, took the club from him, and I hit the person behind me, mm-hmm, that was also coming to help his friend. And they were going to have some fun, I think. And they were surprised. And then the other two guys came and got their wounded.
Were you kind of holding him at bay with the club, or did you back off?
No, I got rid of the club. I took the club. I was raised to be a knife fighter.
Uh-huh.
And I immediately, upon striking the second dude with the club across the shook arm,
uh-huh,
disappeared into the weeds. And hoping they would follow. Actually, hoping, because I was so angry. Anybody who hit somebody helplessly sleeping is real sick.
Were there any comments by the people who were in this group while this was happening?
Get me out of here, I'm hurt.
Oh gosh, how unexpected.
Yeah.
Right.
Get me out of here, I'm hurt. He got me. The other dude on the ground was incoherent because he was really hurt. The first guy And these people aren't expecting homeless people like us to fight back. They're not. We're expecting them to catch us and go, well, just, oh my God, in terror. And it's not going to happen. Then, not while I'm sitting and alive and stuff.
Now, you say that the first person you hit, you got in the ribs, and the second person you...
Got across my arm.
Got across the arm. Again, with the club that you'd taken from the first person.
Yes.
And of course, since this was a defensive action, obviously, you were defending your life.
Yeah, I was still to death.
Uh-huh.
And then I was pissed.
Right. Did you report this to the police?
No.
How do you feel about us playing this tape on the air?
I don't want my name used because I don't want to be hunted.
Okay.
I've already been hunted most of my life. I don't have to have that happen.
Okay. Other than the name, would you like us to play the tape, or how do you feel about that?
Somebody's got to know what the hell's going on. I think the police know what's happening. I really do.
Why do you say that?
Because it's been going on too long. It's been going on for 10 years. They've been ignoring it.
Now, have you heard of a subsequent incident that happened right after yours?
I've heard of like three incidents. It's like they pick once a week, they go out and play. Right across from Saul's Tannery, a group of people just got beat up. A week before that, people over here, somebody on the river got the hell beat out of them. There's another guy running around here with a swollen up head. I mean, it's really swollen, it's really ugly. And they beat him with a club.
Are these people you spoke with, or you just saw?
No, I've seen him.
Now, I spoke to a homeless man who was himself beaten by three youths in Capitola. And we actually got him to the hospital. That was about two months ago. Thank you. And he said he saw two more victims of these beatings on the streets. Perhaps the same fellow with the head that was very enlarged, or the...
Very enlarged, very misshapen, really, really horrible. But it shouldn't be happening. We're already down. We're not here because we want to be here. I'd say 90% of the homeless people here don't want to be homeless, but it's just certain circumstances that go down, and everybody's about two paychecks away from being homeless anyhow. And what comes out of it is my situation. I'm here because of a divorce. I've lost everything. And what's going on is I'm homeless, and I've got a three-year-old daughter who's living with my wife. And I'm struggling to get my stuff back up. I play music. I play good music. I'm known on the mall.
I like your music.
I make a living. And I do it honestly. I don't panhandle. I don't do all that bullshit. I keep myself clean. I work homeless. And what comes out of it is some of the people don't have that option. They don't have the talent and stuff like this. And they're struggling every day just to eat. Just to eat. And then next thing you know, you've got John Law going, well, you're going to sleep, huh? Well, that's illegal, so I think we'll hunt you.
Have you seen much of that recently?
I don't pay attention to it because I'm a reconnaissance marine. They're not going to find me.
I know that when I spoke to you three nights ago on the mall, or four nights ago, when you were playing near Palace Stationery, you were telling me that, there was a man there named Frank who said that he and his group of four companions got sleeping tickets 2 weeks ago. We generally heard that the sleeping tickets were down, but...
They reduced the price, man. That's all they did. That's all they did. They gave him the price. I think it's $65 or something like that.
54. Yeah.
54, yeah. Something like that. And that's enough right there, even still, to make somebody move on. We don't want you here living in Santa Cruz trying to get better. We'll give you a ticket that you can't pay, and we'll make you move. That sucks. That's stupid. That's not America.
It's a form of discrimination against poor people.
Yeah. I don't have as much money as you are, so what the hell?
Punishes them for a basic need.
We've got this group of human beings that are running around hunting help to participate in the fun sport of homeless hunting. And that's hearsay. I've no proof for that, but I've been told this. And the, and then on top of that, we've got the people who are supposedly up holding the law to protect and serve.
The police.
Yes. And so, like we're being hunted twice. Once is a financial thing. Twice is somebody who's going to kill us.
Now, it's interesting that, that there's a third ramification of this, which is that you can't really go to the police comfortably because...
No, you can't, because you're already breaking the law. You're sleeping.
Uh-huh.
You've already broken the law. You've already slept where you can't sleep because it's illegal to sleep at nighttime. It's illegal to sleep from, I guess, 11 o'clock till 11 in the morning until 8 at night. I guess you can sleep.
We had heard that the police, were issuing far, actually, the first tickets I'd heard of in the last month or two was from the group of people that was with you, this fellow named Frank, a Hispanic-looking guy.
Yes.
Who talked about getting tickets, not just sleeping tickets, but also getting other tickets, I don't know, open container tickets, other tickets in that regard is harassment, even if, you know, if a person has an open container and they have a house, they got no problem. But if they have to live outside and they want to be an adult and drink a beer, you know, good luck.
You can't. What comes out of it is you're already miserable. Being homeless is really not very much fun.
Mm-hmm.
I'm luckier than most because I have a way to make earn money, honestly. And on the super bad nights where it's cold, I actually have a chance to get a motel room. Because I'm making enough money to eat, survive.
It's been real cold the last week or so, you know.
And you're already miserable. And to get busted for drinking the damn beer or a bottle of brandy or whatever, they'll get you for sleeping, drunken in public.
Open container.
Blah, 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 blah.
Asking for spare change peacefully.
Blah, 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 blah.
Well, yeah.
Well, I also heard that recently there's some people who are not satisfied with the situation and don't believe the police are taking significant action, not themselves banding together to take action.
The first point is, it goes right back to it. There isn't a homeless person around here that will approach a Santa Cruz cop and go, I just got beat up, unless it's the point where the dude's bleeding and he's about to die.
Right.
And somebody else calls and then leaves, so they're not there when the cops get there.
I think I remember when that happened with Frank Cessna, who was beaten up like in January. The next thing he knew, police, of course, ignored it, but then when he complained about that to the city council's task force on the camping ordinance, they gave him a citation for for open container or drunk in public that potentially threatened his probation.
Mm-hmm. They don't care. They don't want him here. They don't want us here.
It's interesting. It was also the case I heard that Citizens Police Review Board Tony Guerrero, and I have not confirmed this with Tony, this could be an apocryphal story, was told to me, however, that he, having a drink with somebody around the election time, told him that, you know, what about the Happy John Dine case? Doesn't it seem strange that every non-police witness said that, you know, Dine had nothing in his hand, nothing pointed at the police, and then when the police killed him in November of 1997, and yet you had no investigation and you were on that Citizens Police Review Board, and he said, Dine didn't come from here. He wasn't one of us. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. How about that? Yeah. It's very neatly arranged, and what's going on is they're trying to really, really ignore this problem. They're trying to ignore them. They're going, well, they're doing what they're doing, and we got what we got. As long as we got what we got, everything's fine.
I don't know if I've heard it from you or from others, that there's suspicion that these officers are connected, these patrol busters, these youths who are beating people up and clubbing people, to say, engaging in felonious assaults with impunity. That these people are related to police officers, is there any indication of that, or is that just
speculation? Now, mind you, I've not been homeless. I got on my feet, respected man, I have a four-year-old daughter, I had a family, a residence, the whole stroke, few bad turns, and I just, it all disappeared. And I'm back homeless. But for years now, I've been a respectable citizen, all that stuff. And I have heard through the grapevine, which is hearsay and not admissible, but what comes out of it is I've heard that some of the cops' sons are doing this. That's horrible.
If it's true, we don't know those.
I have no solid evidence to prove that.
Right.
I mean, how do you, they're going to wear a sign? I'm a police officer's son?
Right.
Come on, man. That's silly.
You know, some of us asked back in January when Frank Cessna was beaten up. And put in the hospital, just as recently Joe Barker was a week ago.
Oh, my God.
In this incident you mentioned across from Saul's Leathers.
Yeah.
We asked that the city council, as an emergency measure, not because it thinks that campgrounds are wonderful, not because it thinks they can get everybody's agreement in the community, not because it wants to set up a permanent situation, even just set up an area in one of the industrial parks or at San Lorenzo Benchlands that temporarily would provide a safe zone
for
people who are...
The tourists would go nuts, man. That looks really...